This program is presented by a community producer through Midland Community Television. The City of Midland and MCTV are not responsible for the content of the program. The views presented do not necessarily represent those of the City of Midland or MCTV. If you would like to produce your own program, contact MCTV at 837-3474 or access our website, cityofmidlandmi.gov/MCTV.
Local productions seen on Delta College Public Media are made possible with support from viewers like you. Thank you.
Everyone, welcome to Junior Doan's A Spark. I'm Junior Doan, and thank you for joining us. My guest today is Aaron Beekler. Aaron is the chairman of the Bay County Conservation District of Michigan and the owner of Beekler Farms LLC in Auburn, Michigan. Welcome, Aaron. I understand your family's been two generations and now with you, third generation, farming your farm. What persuaded you to do that?
I guess what persuaded me to do it is I grew up with my grandpa farming and my dad farming, and I just enjoyed it from a young age and decided to continue doing it. So I don't know. I guess they say farming is in your blood. I guess it's in my blood.
It seems very complicated when I was reading things that you're being managed by a lot of federal and state agencies, and I once went to a deer showroom when I was climbing on the big things, and I thought, boy, you have to have talent to learn how to drive these. And then I learned that they sometimes share them. What kind of equipment do you use to farm?
I mean, I've got tractors, planters, combines, trucks. Jeez. For hauling the grain. So, you know, that's what I have. And yeah, the equipment is big. It's big, complicated, takes a lot to manage that, fix it. And then on top of that, you have all the planning and marketing and how, you know, how do you raise the stuff? And it's a very, very complicated and capital intensive, you know, business to be in. I mean, a new combine can cost you $800,000-$900,000.
Does that mean you take out a loan, or you split the cost with other farmers, or you loan them a piece of equipment they loan you? Or that's a big number.
Yeah, I think every farmer has a different approach on how they do it. And, you know, many people probably have to take out loans, and, you know, then you have to pay that, you know, those loans back, obviously. And some farmers share equipment. You know, you just like any business or any partnership, if you're sharing equipment, you have to have some pretty good rules in place and try to, you know, figure out anything that could happen. So you have a contract in place for, you know, who uses it when and that kind of stuff, because farming is one of those things. There's a lot of stuff that you, not only does it have to be done, but it has to be done in a timely fashion. So, the way I explain it is, in farming, there's a lot of things that have to be done. Some of them are, they just have to be done, and they don't have to be done tomorrow. But there's other times where it has to be done, and it has to be done tomorrow, because you may not get a chance the next day.
So weather is highly unpredictable. What can you say about that? Are there better predictions? I haven't noticed that as just a citizen, but as a farmer, maybe you're tuning into different sources of information.
The weather leads to my comment of, some things have to be done today because you may not be able to do them tomorrow. If the weather changes, like if you're out spraying fields, just being windy can keep you from being out there to do it, So yeah, weather is a big one. In my career of farming, what has happened, I mean, you really have gotten a lot better at predicting weather, especially short-term weather. You have radar and stuff now that you can look at where 15, 20 years ago, you just didn't, that stuff was not that readily available. I remember when there wasn't cell phones. So,
Interesting. That's a big game changer.
yep.
So, what crops do you raise?
I
What do
raise
you plant?
corn, soybeans, and wheat is what I raise.
And what do you do about pests?
Well, I actually have a person I hired that scouts my crops. So he walks the fields on a weekly basis, and if there's pests and stuff, then you address them. I guess you say you address them accordingly. Depends on what it is as to how you fix it or get rid of them. You may have to spray for them. Sometimes it's not, they're not bad enough. You may have them, but they're not bad enough to affect your yield. So it is a case by case basis.
Is it a certain kind of corn you raise? I understand there are different kinds of corn.
There are different kinds of corn. So you're probably the biggest difference is you have sweet corn, which is what you get in the supermarket and you eat off the cob, or you can get it canned. And then there's what they call feed corn, which feed corn is primarily used for feeding animals. And then there's some food grade corn that is the same. I mean, it's similar to feed corn. It's just that a little bit different nutrient value, and that stuff would go into things like tortilla chips and that kind of stuff.
One of the things I was thinking, if I would wanted to go into farmers knowing nothing, I would have to really study hard, just thinking about, pests and then regulations. If you've never been in farming, which is unlikely, that you take it up as a novice like that, but how do you learn these agencies and how to get along with them and, what their flexibility or an inflexibility is?
I guess a lot of it is that there are some trainings and stuff that come out, so you can go to, and I guess it is kind of like school, so you can go and go to these different trainings, whether it's a webinar, Zoom call, that in-person stuff, that kind of thing. There's agencies out there, like the USDA normally has field service centers located in every county, and you can go there and talk and get some technical assistance. Some of the challenge with that is there's a lot of people that are in those service centers that don't have actual farming experience.
Experience.
They've been, and there's a difference between theory and the implementation of things.
The land grant colleges, weren't they set up to help farmers?
Yes, they were, and Michigan State actually is still very involved in that, and they have some mechanisms to help farmers, and you can reach out to Michigan State to what they would call a Michigan State Extension Agency, and they would be able to help guide you in some of those. So there's various different mechanisms out there to be able to get information, but it's very high level. Those folks don't teach you necessarily how to operate equipment and set things up and that kind of stuff. That you might be able to get that from like a a dealership for tractors and stuff like that, they might be able to help you with some of that. A lot of it is the school of hard knocks. You learn.
I'm not laughing. I'm sympathizing. So for so many of us in so many ways, what kind of licensing do you need or don't you need for farming?
If you're going to be involved in, and there's, so like you said, there's a lot of government regulation that's out there. So if you're going to spray your own pesticides and that kind of thing, you need to have a license to do so. They call it a private pesticide license. You have to get licensed by the state to do that. There's other things that are out there. You have to abide by certain rules for the type of land that you farm. And, you can't farm wetlands and be in some of these programs. So they have stuff tied to it from that perspective. And you have to follow, they have what they would call good, best management practices for farming, and you have to follow those, or people can turn you in for not being responsible or farming responsibly. And when I say turn you in, they can complain to these agencies, and then there can be some repercussions to that.
I read so much about this organic farming and or farmed vegetables primarily, and maybe some fruit, berries. Do you need licenses? It's not what you're raising, I don't think, or is it?
No, I don't do organic. That's a whole nother level of certifications and stuff. So if you're in organic, they actually come out and certify your crops and stuff like that. And I don't know how often that is, because I'm not in it and don't do it. I haven't really
looked at it,
but I know that there's more certifications and things that you have to abide by. So
what is your work on the Bay County Conservation District, which you had?
Yeah, that's an interesting segue into things. So because there's so much regulation and different things in these different organizations on how do you get help in agriculture and stuff, so back 2015, I took my farm and went from what they would call traditional agriculture, which is working your ground, planting and harvesting and then working it up again. And I took my fields and made them all no-till and cover crop. So I don't till my ground unless there's some maintenance tillage involved, but I don't till my ground, and I put cover crop in. And I did that through some programs that they had at the time. And there were some challenges involved in, I found that the process just didn't work as well as it could have worked. So I'm a big fan of, as opposed to complaining about something, right, I get involved to change it. So that was the intent for getting on the board for the conservation district. So I could help to guide some of these programs and whatnot, and work with some of these groups a little bit more closely.
What are the issues around tilling and not tilling?
Depends a lot on what you're growing and how you have to plant, and every crop has got a little different. It likes the ground different ways, meaning maybe a little bit looser, a little more mellow. But a lot of the challenges are that, and I had mentioned a lot of these folks that are in these positions and guiding people haven't ever farmed. So there's a difference between what I call theory and implementation. So it is like weather. Right, weather can be a big challenge, and this year was one of those years. It was really dry in the spring, so therefore the ground is hard. And you can imagine if you're trying to no-till into the ground that's hard, it's a lot more challenging to get the equipment to penetrate into the ground. So you have to understand how to set things up and how to do that stuff.
What type of people are going into farming now that are newbies? Are they city people or are they idealists? Are people good with their hands?
I think you see some of both. I think what I've seen is a lot of the people that are going into farming today that are new, right? I mean, you have people like myself that have come from generations of agriculture, of farming. So their grandparents and maybe their great grandparents farmed, and they're just kind of taking the reins on the farm and I guess kind of coming into it naturally, maybe is the right word. But to actually start right from scratch, I would say it's a lot of people with more passion around it. I think it's twofold. Either it's passion around it, or it's just they want to try something new. Farming seems like a, it's an ideal thing. Like I said, idealist, right? It's nature. It's this great stuff. And a lot of times I think those people find out how difficult it is when they actually get into it.
That's what impressed me. And yet you became a mechanical engineer early on in your life. Had you thoughts of using that in some way?
I mean, I went to school, I graduated high school and went to school and became a went to college, became a mechanical engineer, and then I worked in industry for 20 some years, and that actually helped me out a lot in farming, because farming is a business. You learn how business kind of runs if you're working in industry, and the engineering side, there's a lot of engineering involved in farming. So that has helped. The mechanical engineering degree and it has helped me out a lot in how I approach things. Made me more successful, I believe.
Are your children interested in farming?
My one son helps me out a lot and on the farm, and my oldest son, my youngest son, he actually really enjoys growing plants and doing landscaping and stuff like that. So that I yeah they seem to be enjoying some of that stuff.
I read that you have 570 acres. Is that considered a big farm, a small farm?
That would be considered a small farm these days. I would say average is probably in the couple thousand acre range. Maybe 1500 acres is probably average, but there's guys out there that are farming 5-10,000 acres.
Would you consider amplifying your acreage if you had the chance?
I would consider it. A lot has to do with how engaged my son wants to be in it. Although I'm a not necessarily a believer that bigger is better, it's all a matter of return on investment. So you have to be profitable or you won't be around.
What are some of the things you've learned on the way to being profitable because of variability in weather and regs and equipment delivery? What has helped you?
What has helped me is approaching everything that you do kind of very strategic and methodical, and trying not to let too much emotion come into play and make decisions based on facts and not on try not to make decisions based on just what somebody says, right? That this will be better. You have to get the facts and make sure that that truly has a chance to do better for you.
Explain to us futures. I understand you can, or someone can, sell futures, buy futures. How does that all play into cushioning the price of at the time you sell your product?
Yeah, so futures is the way of looking. It's kind of like looking at a stock price. Stocks change daily. The futures price, which is commodities, so your corn, soybeans, wheat are all a commodity. based thing, and that changes on a daily basis through, and typically it runs off the Chicago Board of Trade. And yes, you can contract stuff. You can do what they call forward contract, which means I sell X amount of bushels during the year, and I have to deliver at such and such a date to do that, which would be harvest time, or other time if you have your own storage on farm. So it's a way to try to manage. It's a marketing thing. It's how you know how much money you make, because in agriculture, I call it, farmers are price takers, not price makers. So we don't set the price. It's all based on the futures, on the market price that's out there. So you play the futures to try to lock in, lock in your profits of the farm. So
have you ever done anything like that?
I do that kind of stuff. Yeah. Every year.
Do you look to do forward to cover your expenses at least, or expenses plus something, and then risk the rest to pricing when it might be actually harvested?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's, you can imagine weather changes and, you know, the difference from year to year. You can't guarantee what your yields are going to be, which the yield is how much grain that you get off from the field. So it's really not a good thing for you if you contract more than what you get off from the field at the end of the year. So there's a certain amount you just have to say, I'm confident I'm going to get this much, and you can forward contract. I have goals as to what kind of profits I want to hit. But at the end of the day, you're not, just because you have goals that you want to hit, and it's actually very hard many times to hit those with the market price. Especially like this year is a good example. The prices are very low, inputs are high. It makes it very difficult to come out in the black, right? To come out and be profitable.
What kind of taxes do you face? Land taxes, product, just what is the tax situation if you're a farmer?
If you relate it to like home ownership, you know, if you have property taxes that you have to pay on property and stuff that you own, if farmers own property and stuff, they have to pay taxes, property taxes on the land that they own. So you have property taxes, and then you have your income tax that you have to pay at the end of the year, I guess like any individual has to pay taxes on what money that they make. So you'd pay taxes on profit that you make. And, you know, you'd have to pay self-employment tax and some of that kind of stuff. As you can imagine, there's a lot of expenses that come with farming. So you've got revenue coming in, minus the expenses that you have for the farm, then whatever that number is your profit or loss.
If you have a couple of years that aren't so good, maybe even flat out or losses, and then you have another couple of years that are really good, can you subtract the losses against the profit in future years?
Yeah, I mean the income tax plays very similar to what you would have on personal taxes to some extent. So yeah, if you have losses, you either get, it becomes a loss, or it gets carried over to a future year.
Does the state require you to do anything that you, I can't think is a bad idea, but let's say, what kind of changes can you expect in farming regulation coming up in the next decade?
Oh boy, that's a loaded question. There's.
Well, let's unload it. Answer the question. So they're actually talking about.
Yeah, there's a lot of regulation then that is being talked about that would be negative on agriculture, or cost the farmers a lot more money to operate. So it's similar to what has been seen in industry for years, where like your air pollution, you know, mandates are get lowered and there's an expense to get to that point. Agriculture is facing some very similar types of things, especially with all the, there's, you know, this like greenhouse gas stuff and those kind of things being talked about. There's a lot of regulation being talked about, and some good, some maybe not as good, but it all has an impact, you know, on cost of doing business.
Does the government, I mean, probably federal more than state, but maybe state, involve farmers in the discussions beforehand regarding regulations or taxes?
I think they try to. I believe one of the reasons I got involved on the board of directors for the conservation district is because I feel that communication is not as good as it really needs to be with a lot of that, and getting everybody's opinion, you know, and have an audience that is going to look at it objectively, right? I think you get better results when you do that.
Thank you so much. I've really appreciated talking with you as a city girl, but I've lived in Midland so long now. Anyway, I've learned a lot, namely that you have to be multi-talented to be a successful farmer. You have to start with a good plot of land and know the vagaries of regulations, weather, equipment, and driving it, and pesticides, and covers, and do you do this or that. And the way to be successful is just like you said about mechanical engineering, be methodical, understand what you're doing, and you do that very well. Anyway, thank you. And remember, everybody, go out and do something nice for someone you know and someone you know. Kindness shared is wonderful. Do it today and every day going forward, and I'll see you next time.
To contact Junia, send her an email at juniadonesthespark@gmail.com. For more information, program schedules, and news about future guests, go to www.juniadonethespark.com. Thank you for joining us. See you next time on Junia Dones The Spark.
Local productions seen on Delta College Public Media are made possible with support from viewers like you. Thank you.
This program is presented by a community producer through Midland Community Television. The City of Midland and MCTV are not responsible for the content of the program. The views presented do not necessarily represent those of the City of Midland or MCTV. If you would like to produce your own program, contact MCTV at 837-3474 or access our website, cityofmidlandmi.gov/MCTV. We hope you enjoy the following presentation.